The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louise.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Hi, friends.
Hey.
Hey.
How
oh,
you doing?
Hey.
Hey. How's everybody doing?
How is everybody doing? CJ, how was your nap?
I'm really sorry, you guys.
Oh,
I.
It's great.
We stand naps. I think this booster took it out of me. I got the new COVID booster, y'all.
As you should.
Make an appointment, though.
Everyone should.
Yeah.
Make an appointment. I will.
Yeah. The pharmacist yesterday was talking about how they'd be out of shots at the end of the day. So if you're going.
Yeah, maybe
I should do that tomorrow.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
You doing theater, Scott? You doing any theater right now?
I'm doing theater. I'm not. It's
Scott's
not,
got
I'm,
a lot going on right now.
Yes. As we were talking pre-show, I'm on a run till October 9th, and today is September 26th. So, but yeah, you know. Working on this festival, which will have already happened by the time this airs, but a lot of spreadsheets, a lot of printing orders, a lot of driving to places to pick up posters and things like that. So
that's what theater is.
Yeah, happy Great British Baking Show, everybody.
Is it start today?
Yes, the 20th. Yeah, today is the beginning
of the new season,
I gotta get back on Netflix. I'm not dating anybody with Netflix right now.
My soul needs that so bad. Yeah. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Everyone's soul needs it so bad.
We do. We need it.
What the world needs is more Great British Bake Off.
What the world needs now.
Needs now. That must sound good with us all trying to sing at the same time.
It's going to sound amazing in post. Yeah, no, but okay, so you've heard this other voice who we'll introduce later. It doesn't matter who it is right now, but it doesn't matter.
It always matters.
But there was something we were kind of, you know, actually, I was texting past guest of the show, Kevin Shuey, about.
Kevin Shuey. Who's happy, that?
I don't know, but he happens to live with our mystery guest,
yes.
Which is a new thing as of a few weeks ago.
Kind yep.
Of yeah. But Kevin,
new roommates.
Yeah, Kevin was texting about, like, do you guys ever cover movies that are based on, like, Shakespeare shows or theater? And I said, yes,
do we
do a recurring miniseries on that every year, and we've done it a ton. And he suggested a few. We had done a couple of them, but West Side Story and the Baz Luhrmann R&J and things like this. But then he brought up another one, and it was Romeo and Juliet. Now... I know nothing about this movie except that its sequel is called Sherlock Gnomes, which makes no sense. So I was,
what's happening?
In the sequel, Sherlock Gnomes joins the characters of Romeo and Juliet in a mystery story.
Right. It's
I thought
amazing.
You were about to say a three-way.
Johnny Depp plays Sherlock.
No. He does.
So question so then the, for you, the, Kate.
Yeah.
So Kevin says it's a good movie. Then last night at trivia, Kate like doubles down on this, like, no, it's good. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's talk about this. So talk to us about Romeo and Juliet, why you decided to watch it, and whether or not it's actually worth covering on the podcast.
Yes. So Kevin and I have a tradition on Saturday mornings called Coffee and Cartoons that we made up ourselves. And it's we've started a running list of just sort of mostly nostalgic, but some new children's movies, animated movies. And we make our coffee and sit and watch one of those. And it's delightful. And I found out about this movie through like my Spotify playlist because it was an Elton John song that came on, and it was like this Elton John song from Romeo and Juliet. And then I went through and I figured out it is scored entirely with Elton John songs. And then all of the James Newton Howard score is like riffs on different Elton John themes, which
love
is
it.
Delightful.
Wow.
And I'm a huge Elton John fan. So I was like, okay, we need to watch this movie. Cause that's wild. And he's an executive producer on it. And then
Benny and the gnomes.
Benny and the gnomes.
Is it stuff like that? Is it just like
there's lots of great like moments where like like somebody hits like a computer key and it's like boom, 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 boom. But and then they do the intro. It's love great. That. And then there's like a lawnmower race to Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. There's
wow.
It's
wow.
very sweet. It's really sweet. And
Kate,
so
have you ever seen Rocket Man?
I love Rocket Man.
Okay, good. Okay. That's a big one for us.
I was very upset when y'all covered Rocket Man without me, because I was already a friend of the podcast, and I was like, no, I want to talk upsetting. About that movie.
I'll be honest, I didn't know.
Only talk about that movie.
Yeah, I didn't know you liked it, and we already had a guest on, unfortunately. So we'll get you on. We can talk Rocket Man sometime. When we do Romeo and Juliet, we'll pivot to Elton John and do a
pivot to Elton John, yeah. Because Rocket Man is in. I would make a pitch for one of the best movie musicals of the last 10 years.
I would agree.
We yeah. all agreed pretty much yeah. on that. Yeah. Yeah.
I went and okay. saw it and then like grabbed CJ's ear and was like, come with me to see this. You will love it. And we yes. both just like wept through the whole thing.
Yeah. yeah.
And then I think we made Scott watch it. It was just perfect. It was perfect.
I made everyone that watch it that effect. Would sit and listen with me. Yeah. So
I saw it with my dad, who obviously is the one that introduced me to all the Elton John. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting there, and you know that big scene where he gets kind of the tune up as he's singing, and then he goes out onto the Dodgers Stadium stage yeah. and mm-hmm. starts singing. My dad leans over and goes, oh, that's the concert I went to.
No.
What?
I was that like, was just like this... 48 hours after he tried to kill himself, too. Like,
I was like,
that's
that when you tell
concert.
Your story about seeing Elton John in concert, it was this concert?
Oh, damn. No.
Yeah.
Wow, that's dope. That's cool as hell.
That is cool.
Elton John is one of the most theatrical musicians that has ever existed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And
oh,
that absolutely. Is exactly why we're here today, right? Mm-hmm. To talk about theater. Yeah. Whoa. Mm,
nice.
Oh, what a pivot.
Was that clean?
Line.
It wasn't.
Yeah,
that
was pretty
wasn't.
Good. Pretty good.
It's okay. Yeah. Segway. Welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
'Tis true. And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And this week we are joined by a very special guest who you've already heard speak. This is a dear friend of mine who is also a LA local actress, a singer-songwriter, a phenomenal director who happens to be directing my play at Sacred Fools, starring Scott and CJ.
Mm-hmm.
We met working at the Pasadena Playhouse, where she was the assistant to the artistic director, as well as the artistic coordinator, which was a huge deal. You may have seen her in many, 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 many starring roles in local regional theater shows at the Pasadena Playhouse, Music Theater West, Five Star Theatricals. She actually was in Little Mermaid at Music Theater West, playing Ariel.
Awesome.
Which, dope. And then she was also, no big deal, she was also Elsa in Frozen Live at the Hyperion at Disneyland. And she's a dear friend of mine and of the pod, and a new collaborator of mine that I'm very excited to work with in the future. It's Catherine McDonough. How you doing, Kate?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Bailey. How are you?
So great. So great. We're glad to have you
Welcome.
On.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're to this week and for the next, for the foreseeable, like the next eight Bailey's picks. All right. This is a Bailey's pick in case y'all didn't know. We just finished covering Euripides.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Euripides Nuts. And we, which is the name of the miniseries. And we are now moving on to, my old miniseries within a miniseries was doing all of the NBC live movies and live musicals. And we had a blast. We started with Sound of Music, Carrie Underwood. Right, Scott?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have nothing to say about that?
Please.
Listen,
Scott.
I got shamed a little bit the last time I brought it up, and
I like your take. I want to hear it.
I think that Carrie Underwood's casting is more accurate than Julie Andrews.
How dare you?
How?
I'm gonna make you cover nonsense.
He's more
just
suited
for that.
In age and personality to it's the role. I felt that. Ms. Andrews.
How long has it been since you watched the original?
Oh, I've never seen it.
If you're thinking of like now Julie Andrews, then yes, she's too old to play Maria.
It is a
provocative fake take.
It's a bit that got him canceled 2 years ago.
Fighting with it. It got you canceled.
Yeah, he's been canceled ever since. It's fine.
Yeah, you can't knock Julie Andrews. They'll come for you. Exactly. Those fans will come for you.
The podcast gods canceled him. And us, just for having him on. Yes. We kept him. It's fine. We love him. He's ours. And we like it.
Yeah.
We did all of those and they were a blast. But now I wanted to focus on something else for a while that was going to take up a shit ton of my choices, because I thought that was kind of fun. So Kate and I were brainstorming, and Kate was like, I would love to cover Alan Menken on your pod. And I was like, oh, that's huge. I don't know if I could just choose three. It'd be really difficult, because we do playwrights, and we've done even Andrew Lloyd Webber and Sondheim, but we just choose three of their works. I wanted to do more, and we're going to do more. So Kate pitched we do all of Menken's Disney projects. And I was like, that's it.
Seven?
I think it's eight.
Seven or eight?
It actually might be nine, but we're not going to do two of them.
Okay.
So are the two that we are not going to do, unless anybody has an opinion otherwise, are Home on the Range and Mirror, Mirror.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those are the two. Enchanted. He's not Mirror, Mirror. Or is he Mirror, Mirror?
Enchanted or Disenchanted.
Correct. Right. That's true. We're not doing either. I forgot there was Disenchanted. So I don't want to cover Home on the Range. I don't want to cover Enchanted, and I don't want to cover Disenchanted. If somebody wants to fight us on that and is like, no, do it. Maybe we'll do a bonus episode that's just those three all at the same time or something. But we are for sure doing the Disney Renaissance movies, and we're going to end with Tangled. But we're also doing Newsies.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I remember when we first started doing this, me bringing up like doing Disney Renaissance or like all of the really good Disney musicals, and this is the way to go at it in my a good solution.
We're killing like eight birds with this stone, because we're getting to cover Menken, which means we get to talk Ashman. We've talked a
which
lot
we
of Tim,
should
which we should
yeah
we've talked a lot of Tim Rice on this pod, but he'll get to come back up. We've talked a lot of, Musker and Clements in general as directors are exciting to talk about, because they're sort of the guiders of this whole Renaissance, right, with Ashman and Menken. So there's like 100 things we're going to get to tackle here. And that's what excited me most. I want to have Kate on for all of them. I think she's going to be a great voice for all of this. She's very Disney-minded.
For sure.
I think that at some point we just need to talk about the crappy 70s and early 80s Disney, like The Rescuers.
A good movie.
How dare you say that?
Watch
crappy.
The Rescuers now. Watch it now.
It's good.
I saw it as a kid. Rescuers Down Under was good,
that's
though.
The way to go.
And The Great Mouse Detective was good. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
All good.
I love The Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah. These are all good movies. Yeah.
Vincent Price, guys.
Yes. Yeah. Also, Great Mouse Detective, the first Musker and Clements film. Directors of Little Mermaid. So this week we're beginning with the first Alan Menken Disney project in 1989. It is The Little Mermaid. There is so much to frickin' say about this movie.
Yes.
And
I want to talk about the movie. I want to talk about the remake. I want to talk about the weird Queen Latifah Shaggy live version that they did on TV, and I want to talk about the musical. That's a lot to get in, so we're gonna go kind of quick through. But let's start here. I want to hear everyone's context with this movie and material, and then we're gonna throw it to CJ so she can break it the fuck down. Cool. So let's start with our guest, Kate. What is your relationship with The Little Mermaid from the beginning?
Okay, so this movie came out right before I was born.
Right.
So it was very much, sorry, Scott.
This is making me feel old too.
This is very much a part of my childhood. Like, there's a really great video of me as like a 3 or 4 year old singing Part of Your World, but like thinking I know all the words, but singing very deep
none
words.
None of them, yeah.
It's really great. It's like, look at this treasure. Treasure of Trolls. And so like very much a part of my life, very much like, you know, me and my sister pretending to be mermaids in the pool. And then, right? Yeah, CJ knows. And then and then in 2019, I did the musical version, which, backtrack, I saw on Broadway in high school.
What did you think of it when you saw it on Broadway?
Well, I was pretty snotty, pretentious high school conservatory kid. So I sat there and I was like, this isn't very good. So even at the time, I was sort of like, I think, well, and I'd seen Lion King, you know, like I sort of knew what they were trying to do and didn't think they did it successfully. But so then I did the stage show. I still don't think it's great, but I really enjoyed doing it.
If Julie Taymor had directed it, would it have been better?
I think so, yes. Probably.
I think that's the question that was sort of posed at the time, was like, should we have given this to somebody who would have just like conceptualized it to a point of like insanity?
Lion King on Broadway was Boon Rakku Theater. Wasn't Little Mermaid like Rolly Shoes?
Yeah.
It was, well, and it was, I'm going to say it's Francesca Zambarello, I think is her name. And it was an opera director who sort of did like a half-ass conception.
Right.
Like, so it didn't feel like, right, because then Glenn Casale came in and made it more Disney. And that's kind of the version you can license now.
Right.
But the one on Broadway was like, there were these weird, like, kind of phallic pillars that rolled on stage. Like, yeah, everybody was on Heelys. It was really hard to tell when we were in the ocean and when we were on land, which I still think is the failing of the stage musical, is that unless you literally have everybody flying or like in water, like it's just kind of hard to know, especially once you get like the end of the show, when you get like Ariel and Triton and Grimsby and Eric, and they're all on stage together and you have to like establish like Triton's swimming, but Eric's on the sand.
Oh my God.
Maybe it's meant to be animated.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I will say, my biggest takeaway from my recent viewings in preparation for this was like, oh, that it worked best as an animated film because of the nature of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's my hot take. And I've seen the first half of the live action and none of the Queen Latifah.
Okay.
So that's what I will say as my context for this conversation. And I tried to go through everything this time through like a song lens, truly looking at the music involved, since we were talking about Menken specifically as like a through line of these podcasts. Sure. But yeah.
Scott, what's your relationship with Little Mermaid, but I guess Menken in general? I didn't even think about that. Sorry, Kate. I mean, we can give it all, but Little Mermaid specific too. Yeah,
yeah, and I also have a Scottpedia if we want to do it.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess my first interaction was I did Little Shop in high school. Mm. I did a couple productions of Little Shop, but I did it in high school, so that was my initial reaction to it, and then, I remember there was a touring company doing Little Shop, so we went to see, you know, a professional company do it. So I was kind of super stoked to go see Little Mermaid, which was early high school, middle school. But it was kind of a group date. It was like three boys, three girls kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was awesome. Like, it was so... Because we talk about the Disney Renaissance, but like Disney was not a thing for a little while. Like they were always a thing, but they weren't. And so like you were just kind of aghast watching it on the big screen and watching all of that opening and the storm and the fish and all of it. So that was it. And then I've watched it, you know, a few times over the years. I obviously didn't grow up with it, so it's not as ingrained in me, but...
Yeah.
I just then friend of the podcast, Brian Krasner, my roommate, he and I watched it last night and fucking had a blast. Like, like, oh my God, it's so good. Such good voices. But yeah.
I was 5 years old the summer that this came out. Like, this was huge for me. And my mother is a fun hater, but my dad loves going to movies. So it was like an event that we would go to these movies together. And my dad always used to talk about, like, when I got older, I remember him being like, you would not believe the garbage that I sat through for you kids. Like, he talked about how bad Rainbow Bright was in theaters. But he will still say to this day that Little Mermaid is one of his absolute favorites. This movie made me want red hair.
Sure.
I had all of the I had all of the memorabilia from this movie. In fact, in first grade, I took it as a show and tell one day, and then everyone mercilessly made fun of me because I was such a fan of Little Mermaid. And then after that, I vowed that I hated the movie. But wow. Like all of these, like those years, like Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, those were just, I was a little girl, and though I feel like those movies were made specifically for me, and I loved, I had the clamshell VHS tapes, which are now living on Friend of the Pod, Jay and Natalie's shelf. Yeah. I have a VHS memorial library there, even though I'm not dead.
That's awesome.
This is a big one for me.
Can I just say, you just unlocked like a core memory for me, because I was like, oh, I had Little Mermaid bed sheets.
Of course.
Nice. But I didn't remember that till you were talking about the memorabilia. Nice.
I had a Little Mermaid beach towel. I had a Rainbow Bright bedspread. But yeah.
That rules. That rules. Yeah, I was born in 90, so this was right before me, but I had a cousin, I think, that brought it over when I was 4 or 5 and put it on, and I was just, like, enamored. Yeah,
it's a good one.
I definitely had an Ariel toy. I had I had a lot of Flounder stuff. I was a big Flounder kid.
Aww.
And Flounder. Yeah, I had like, a Flounder stuffed animal that I was big into for a while, and then I had a pool toy that was Flounder. But then I think at one point I convinced my parents to buy me the Disney Store clamshell bra and I swear, I had it for a while, and then I think my dad might have thrown it away or something. I don't know.
That's
a whole
that.
Trauma we're not going to unlock right now. But I'm a huge fan of this movie. In terms of Mankin, Little Shop was one of the first musicals I saw as a kid on stage, and I loved Rick Moranis, so I watched that movie quite young as well. And I've always loved everything. And Newsies was huge for me as a kid, so I've always been in love with Mankin, whether I knew it or not. I've just always been drawn to his music and Ashman as well as a lyricist. And to pivot a little bit, real quick, Kate, give us if you have any other Mankin-specific context that isn't Little Mermaid context, give it. But then I want to let Scottopedia it up.
You mean like, I did a little bit of research, and then also I watched Howard, the documentary, in prep for this.
Sure.
Have you seen that?
No, Disney Plus Ashman doc.
Highly recommend. But I don't think I realized that Mencken wasn't, I guess Mencken's been such a huge part of my life that in my mind, he was sort of always famous. And he must have been this famous composer before he did Little Mermaid.
Sure.
But he wasn't. And kind of Disney Animation was not, Disney was, but Disney Animation was sort of failing at the time. So they had done Little Shop, which was this like incredibly successful off-Broadway show, and then basically went straight to there was some other stuff in between, but their next big hit, and particularly Mencken's next big thing, was Little Mermaid.
But your first introduction would have been Little Mermaid, and then from there on
to Mencken, it would have been Little Mermaid,
and then probably just grown with his other works as they came out and things like that.
I didn't know Little Shop till like high school, which
sure
is weird.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, Scott,
what?
There's this thing that you do that I love that you do.
No.
When you do it.
Yeah, the way I do the things I do.
That one.
Scottpedia.
Alan Irwin Mencken was born on July 22nd, 1949 at French Hospital in Manhattan to Judith and Norman Mencken. His father was a boogie-woogie piano-playing dentist, and his mother was an actress, dancer, and playwright. His family was Jewish. Mencken developed an interest in music at an early age, taking piano and violin lessons. He began to compose at an early age as well. He attended New Rochelle High School in New Rochelle, New York, and New Rochelle.
Yeah, like New Rochelle, fucking
New York.
He graduated in 67. He then enrolled at NYU, that's New York University, to the
Tisch?
Kids. Well, it wasn't Ash? Tisch at the time, no. He graduated in 1972 from University College of Arts and Sciences at the Heights campus, which is now the College of Arts and Science at NYU. It was not Tisch. Yeah.
Got it.
Tash.
He didn't go to Tisch.
Tash. How much a Tash?
He didn't go to Tash.
Tash. After graduating, Mencken's plan was to become either a rock star or a recording artist. Yeah, right. His interest in writing musicals increased when he joined the Broadcast Music Inc. BMI Musical Theater Workshop. Mencken worked on a variety of projects through the 70s until he finally broke through when playwright Howard Ashman chose him to write the music for his musical adaptation of Kurt Vonnegut's novel, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, which I'm really, really wanted. I got to find it. I didn't even know it existed. Sounds I knew the great. Story. I'm a Vonnegut fan. So,
of course.
That musical opened in 1979 at the WPA Theater to excellent reviews, but modest box office. Mencken and Ashman wrote their next musical called Little Shop of Horrors for a cast.
Which we have
of
covered on this podcast, by
we
the
have
way.
Covered
go back and
it,
listen
yes.
to it. It was yeah. a Little Pot of Casters,
yeah.
is what we called it.
And the history of Little Shop is big because it kind of it got okay reviews, but not great reviews, and then it slowly built a cult following. Just like the movie, and then just kept going and going. It never stopped. That was the thing with Little Shop.
Just like Audrey, too.
Right. I got you.
Anyone? I try really hard on this pod, but it's
well,
okay. I've learned I'm not funny, but it's fine.
You are fine.
There are three people in Greece laughing right now.
That's right. They're enjoying it thoroughly. On the strength of the success of Little Shop of Horrors, Mencken and Ashman were hired by the Walt Disney Studios Corporation to write the music for The Little Mermaid. He then went on to do a shit ton and won a shit ton of awards. Mencken is one of 18 people to have won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony, otherwise known as an EGOT. But he's also one of only two people to have won a Razzie, an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony, or a REGOT.
No shit.
Yes, he also has a Razzie.
What was the Razzie for?
I don't know.
I bet it's Home on the Range or some shit.
Something bad, yeah.
Rude.
Mencken was introduced to ballet dancer Janice Roswick while working with the Downtown Ballet Company. They have been married since November 1972. Still together. Aww. Since 1972. They have two daughters, Anna Mencken and Nora Mencken. And thus concludes Scottpedia.
Oh, he won it for... Aww.
What?
Oh, no.
Newsies.
Oh!
Whoa!
Wow.
To be honest, I've only seen that once, and it was a group of boys that were like, this is our favorite musical. And I watched, I was like, sure. Okay.
If you were, but
it's,
like.
It's amazing.
If you, okay, but I didn't grow up with it. I know we're going to cover Newsies, but like.
I didn't either.
I didn't see it till I was, I don't know, 27.
Mm-hmm,
And I was like, is this going? Like, and I watched it with my friend who was like obsessed with it as a kid. But if you were to like come back as an alien and just watch Christian Bale dancing that sequence in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what?
It's so good.
I think it's like the movie Hook. If you're a kid, like big movie
okay,
for
but
me
Hook
growing
is amazing.
Up. Listen though, anyone else
God
that wasn't like
it.
A kid enjoying
the
that during the holidays
canceled.
Hates it. Fucking hates it. So like that's what I feel like Hook is for a lot of
so Newsies is some people took but I can respect that because
yeah.
you can, no one can say a bad word about Hook to me. I will fight
I can
death.
Prove it mathematically. I'll make you cry because by the end you'll have to admit that I'm right
I wasn't just doing that to piss Scott off.
I've heard plenty of that people hate that movie.
That Hook is a failure of a film.
I'm sure it failed. That makes no difference to me in whether I think it's amazing. I'm just saying.
When was the last time you watched it? You can't watch it. You couldn't sit
within
through it
the last within the last year.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't believe
I've just rewatched it.
I watch it like at least once a year. Yeah, it's like
I watch it like once a week.
All.
Yeah, it's maybe Spielberg's best, but I think
come on, Bailey. Now it's me.
Yes,
that's
me. Yes, he's said it.
It's his best family film. No, well, okay. Here's the thing.
Better than E.T.?
No. Great it's John Williams score.
Actually, last night at trivia, we went deep into Spielberg because one of the questions was higher or lower. Does Spielberg have 24 directorial films? And everyone's like, it's got to be lower. And I was like, no, it's absolutely higher. Yeah. Like he's got 30 something. And it was what, 34 or something like that?
I mean, he cranked out. He did Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year.
The same year.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later did Lost World, which is good. Yeah, and Amistad the same year.
Yeah.
Color Purple the next year. So we should talk about Spielberg instead. Should we just do Spielberg?
Yeah.
Do a Spielberg pod.
How do we feel if Spielberg had directed the live-action Little Mermaid? Would we have liked it more?
It's a hard call for me.
I'm not a big, like... person that does things by directors anyway, so I couldn't tell you.
So, High Times, Hard Times, which is the song that Anne Margaret sings in Newsies, is the song that won the Razzie for worst song and score, which is sad. But that same year, he wins for a Whole New World for Aladdin.
I'm gonna put in an early pitch as we continue this podcast. I think his best stuff was written with Howard Ashman.
Yeah,
Mankin? I agree.
That's what I will say.
I wouldn't even know which ones those are, to be honest. But I'm gonna look them up now.
You're gonna find out as we go. But let's get back to Little Mermaid specifically, which is a Ashman Mankin, and in fact. You know, their first major hit together that in terms of mass popularity, I guess. CJ, go ahead and break this fucker down.
Hell yeah.
Because then I want to talk a little bit about the Disney Renaissance and the box office. But go ahead.
Yeah.
CJ's breakdown.
Ariel, a mermaid, is 16 years old and not a child. She's a massive human curiosity and possibly fetish, as she is a collector of land stuff and doohickeys. But she loses her goddamned mind when she happens upon Prince Eric's birthday party on a motherfucking boat and saves him when the night goes south due to a maelstrom resolving in shipwreck.
Yeah.
Her father, King Triton, is an avid human hater and forbids her going above surface ever again. No one understands. Except Ursula, the sea witch, with whom she makes a deal. Give up her voice for a pair of gams. As a woman, I love giving up my voice just to have a boyfriend.
Yeah. And that was CJ's breakdown. Yeah. Now, there's a lot in there, obviously, that we will, I think, have to tackle at some point. But we are also, we're sort of here... Because we're going to talk about it. We're going to get into it. But also, like, because we're talking Mankin, I don't want to go so deep into, like, the problems that Disney is having at this time with, like, gender problems, race problems. All these things are very apparent, and we are not the people that need to necessarily, like, describe all of that to the world and rehash it all again. But we will touch on it. But I wanted to say this. At this time, this movie... was the first, technically the first princess, quote unquote, movie since 1959.
Mm-hmm.
The last one was Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, wow. Was that the last? And I fucking love Disney's Sleeping Beauty much.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful film. It's a little cold and harsh, but I love it. Mm-hmm. It's a gorgeous, gorgeously designed film. But, and before that is Snow White and a few of the others, right? You get a lot of those early... Disney princess movies. But then
they get scared away from it after Sleeping Beauty because they're like, boys don't want to see this shit. So everything they make is trying to, their whole thing is like, okay, it has to go to boys. Boys and girls have to like this, which just, there's a thousand problems with that.
Right.
But there's, that's what ruined them. Scott brought this up earlier. There was like a 20, 30 year period where everything they're making is failing. Like there's a couple live action things here and there that'll do okay. Escape from Witch Mountain, like things that, you know, that'll do all right. But then
Robin Hood, which I think was probably way more successful after the fact, although I don't know.
Right. But and that's true. That was a later success and things like this. But so then they're sort of failing. They
My understanding at the time was like the live action division was kind of the only reason the animation division was still around.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And I think by then maybe Touchstone exists. When does Touchstone start?
Yeah,
Scott?
Touchstone starts in the early 80s or so.
So they're making more money on their adult movies. I don't mean adult films, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like on their movies for adults than they are on their family films all of a sudden. And, you know, and now and then they're getting out their like little 80s cult live actions that people love and whatever. But almost
I'm sorry. I was going to interject. One of the other things too was as the 60s move on, they start to cut back on their animation. So they're using a lot of like cheaper techniques. It's like you look at Robin Hood, which I like, but it looks awful in comparison to
Cinderella. Big John is literally Baloo from Jungle Book.
Yeah.
But I love it. Such a good movie.
No, it's great. But they the are animation. Cutting corners, and it's very obvious.
You can feel it
when you rewatch it. And there's a lot of cutting corners in those directions with that kind of thing.
And the thing I wanted to interject based on what you were just saying is that one of the reasons they didn't want to make Little Mermaid was because they thought it was for girls, as you were saying. Mm-hmm. And then the other reason was because they had recently had a lot of success with Splash.
Yes.
And they thought it would be too similar.
Right. Right. Exactly. And there's a lot of fighting going on between whether we make this movie or not. Jeffrey Katzenberg at the time, who's a piece of shit, was like really fighting against the whole movie, really didn't want it. He's like, it's too much like Splash. It's too much like this. He's the one that was like, we have to cut part of your world. No kid will sit through this movie. And then it's like the greatest Disney movie song of all time. And it's sort of like, what?
I will say to his credit, he is the reason they had Howard Ashman.
No, it's true. Like, I mean, Katzenberg.
He brought Howard Ashman to Disney.
For sure.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah. He did some things.
He's a complicated
individual. He's also
an
asshole. But, yeah. No, exactly.
But they said in the screener, like, all the kids started squirming during Part of Your World, and they were like, it's too slow. No kid will ever sit through this.
Right. And
Howard
all the
Ashman
animators
said,
agreed.
Over my dead body, will you cut this song?
And apparently, all the animators agreed. They were all sort of like, yeah, man, it's boring. Kids aren't going to like this. And then it's huge, you know, it's kind of massive. Now, what actually sells it bigger is not the movie itself in terms of its first release, but this is an extremely profitable movie for the studio, for Disney.
Mm-hmm.
This begins the Disney renaissance, as we call it, quote unquote. But all of these movies that are coming up, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, all of this, these are extraordinarily profitable movies, and maybe at the time, the most profitable movies ever made. And this movie makes $85 million during its first release, which is not a ton, but it's a lot. At the time, it's actually
Yeah, because at that time, like $100 million was the unattainable.
Correct.
Now that's opening weekend.
Now that's hilarious. Endgame got $1 billion in opening weekend. Yeah, right. Like, great. But within 2 years, Little Mermaid had made $2 billion for Disney.
Yeah.
It had multiple re-releases. The clamshell VHS was one of the most sold VHS physical media pieces of all time. And the music, the soundtrack of the movie, and it was extremely profitable. But obviously, it sold like hotcakes on its own. But there was a second release. Does anybody remember this? It was called Sebastian's Calypso Album.
I kind of remember it, yeah.
It was huge, and it sold better than the soundtrack itself. Like, it was a massive piece of this.
Everyone loved him. I remember that being a big thing when I was a kid.
And it had a second album. It was like
Sebastian's party gras or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Or, party, you know, gras. Some crap. Oh my God.
But like these, it made so much money that they're like, oh, we can start doing these again. Mm-hmm. And it opens up the door for things like Beauty and the Beast. And even down the road, Tangled and Moana and Frozen and stuff that probably they wouldn't have come back to if this had failed.
Right. Right.
When I was
and
a kid.
That's just exciting to me.
Yeah. I distinctly remember every summer we would wait and go see the Disney movie as a family. And then at Christmas time under the tree, I knew exactly what package to look for because I knew we were getting the clamshell. That was the thing. You would release the movie in the summertime and you'd release the VHS
At
Christmas time.
Yeah.
It's God, I had so many of those.
I have so many.
All my clamshells are sitting right above Fox and the Hound, Escape from Witch Mountain, Mary Poppins, Toy Story, Sound of Music, right on top of each other.
Yeah, mine are all at Jay and Natalie's in the Valley. So,
well, I'm going to go steal them and make them part of my collection. Okay, so I'm a huge nerd for hand-drawn animation. This movie looks really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's of a time for sure.
It is. But it's because it's hand drawn and we're so used to CGI now that it's like
not
you
me.
Have to
give
kind
me
of
my
warp
Miyazaki.
Your brain back into it a little
my
bit.
My early Miyazaki.
I prefer it. Yeah.
Well,
my first time watching it at this age and on a really nice, like the TVs we have are so much nicer than the TV I used to watch this movie on.
Right.
So I was like, oh, this is weird to like, I was seeing too much of it almost.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Scott, I cut you off.
No, not at all. I was going to jump on CJ's Miyazaki comments because this is kind of the first wave where you can see for the first time the reciprocation in the animation world of influence.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff, especially in that opening moment, that looks like anime, that looks like Miyazaki, because all these animation
Miyazaki
nerds...
has his own Little Mermaid.
Right, well...
One of his fucking favorites, Ponyo. Yeah, Ponyo.
And so it all goes full circle. Anime
Fathoms
was inspired...
Below that opening... Like you're saying, Scott, like has so much Miyazaki.
Oh,
the waves, the way things are drawn.
Which is a killer opening number, by the way. I love that
killer
opening number.
Oh, it is.
And I think re-watching this, I was like seeing how much Disney has stolen from itself, like from this film, right? Because the opening of Frozen is the opening of Little Mermaid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you
know. With the ice pit guys. Like it's
that's
just,
what I was about to say.
Same. And then there's a shipwreck.
But also, there's if you kind of look at it all, it's almost the structure they've decided has to be for a lot of the princess movies. There's always sort of like the workman song at the beginning that like teaches us about the world a little bit.
Yeah,
they have it in Pocahontas. You know, like, they have it in Moana. They
hi ho.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Well, I mean, and it's kind of the musical theater of that era, and that was the whole thing that Ashman was trying to do. He was like, well, Broadway doesn't like me, so maybe animation is the place for the modern musical, right? Yeah, there's always like the big like establishing the world song, and there's a want song, and there's a tavern song, and there's like a villain song, and it all like kind of checks those boxes.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One of my favorite scenes in Beauty and the Beast is the tavern scene, is the Gaston tavern stuff. Like that shit rules. And that's
have y'all
kinda,
ever
you know,
seen the Hey Girl dubbed music video of the opening of Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, sure.
Sounds great.
I'll have to check that out.
It's just some guy that dubs over the whole time for Belle's voice.
Oh,
and
I have seen it.
Instead of saying,
they
were all saying, hey girl, like the whole time.
Hey, girl.
That's funny.
Very funny.
I like that. All right, y'all. So to get a little deeper into the music of this, before we pivot to the sort of the stage show and the movie, the remake, and the, you know, all that stuff. What are your songs? Like, what are the ones that you're like? These are the songs. Obviously, Part of Your World is like the maybe the most famous. Besides, I don't know, Under the Sea maybe would be.
Well, am I wrong on this? Was this the musical that kind of started the powerhouse villain number? Because Poor Unfortunate Souls is a banger of a song. And then after that, like you had some really, and I guess not so much with, well, you kind of have it with Beauty and the Beast, but I'm thinking.
Fire, hellfire.
Again, that's a great one. In
Don't
Hunchback,
get me started.
I'm thinking of fucking Be Prepared and Lion King.
Sure.
Like,
sure. Definitely for Disney. I feel like there's got to be some good villain stuff before.
There's not, like, Maleficent doesn't have a song. Cruella DeVille doesn't really have her. I mean, she has a theme, but she doesn't have a song.
I feel like the woman in The Rescuers, who's like the abductress or whatever in the red dress, I feel like she sings something. Am I crazy?
Looks like
I
don't, me in my 60s.
I don't think anybody sings in Rescuers.
I think you're right. That's not a musical. You're right.
No.
But she's terrifying, that woman you're talking
terrifying.
About.
She's
terrifying,
yeah.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was trying to think... Does the Evil Queen in Snow White, like, I was trying to go back to the early ones.
She's just hot and then she's ugly. Like, that's it.
Yeah. She's just the spells and stuff, but she doesn't sing any of it.
It's funny because the tie over into that I see, and I mean, it's just a fucking fairy tale thing, is the mistrust of, like, the local wise woman, and she's a witch and she's evil and all that stuff. But that's just Hans Christian Andersen. Fairy tale stuff about not trusting women that aren't
about
married.
Old women.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
You watch out for the unmarried women. This is what she becomes.
Yeah. Right.
I believe this is correct. Kiss the Girl and Under the Sea were nominated against each other for best song that year. Yeah.
And they're great. And there's a lot of really good songs.
Those are the two I would vote for. Like
the two Sebastian songs.
Kiss the Girl was probably the one I was singing the most at that time. But I just, you know what kind of disappointed me in rewatching the movie last night? I wanted more songs. There's huge periods where you're just like,
watch the live action version.
I don't know.
They cut out. I've watched it. I have things to say about it.
But I actually wanted more music in it. But I love it. I was just taken back to being young and being a kid and was just like, it's just, and Flounder is awesome. And Sebastian's awesome. Ursula is awesome. It's an awesome fucking villain. God damn.
Based on Divine. Can I piggyback off of what you were just saying before, Scott, about there not being enough songs? Because I think the thing I was struck by in watching the animated one this time is, like, because I was like, oh, this is why it doesn't work any other time, in my opinion. Because there's actually not much script to that movie.
Right.
There's actually a lot of scenes that have no dialogue at all, that are all like visual storytelling to an amazing score by Alan Menken. Like, and I don't think I noticed that till this watch, that I was like, oh, nobody has said anything in 5 to 7 minutes. Maybe not that long, but
To what, like, and what you're saying, I agree so much. And I want to give a little credit also to Musker and Clements, the directors of this, who also go on to do Tangled and Beauty and the Beast and Moana and all that shit. They rule. This is their second thing together. The first thing they did was Great Mouse Detective. But something they do, which rules, something they do really well in this and in Moana with Lin-Manuel Miranda everything that they do, especially Beauty and the Beast, actually, they really capitalize on the lyrics and the score in terms of what the characters are doing. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like the way they capitalize on all of it is exciting, especially in this movie, but I feel like all of them, they do it so well. And there's just so many moments where you're like, that could have just been like a random dance moment, and they choose to use the lyric and they get like a third laugh out of something that could have just been like a and they make it like a legitimately memorable moment that is stuck in our brains forever.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And that's all this whole collaboration team just is.
Another movie that comes to mind, and it's a couple years later. I was 10 years old when Nightmare Before Christmas came out, and my dad took me to see it, and it really creeped me out. It was not my thing when I was a kid, but you know, now it's this massive cult classic. When I watch Menken stuff, like, I love Nightmare Before Christmas, don't get me wrong, but my hot take on that is, like, listen to the lyrics. They needed, like, another rewrite. Mm-hmm. Just another rewrite. And all the stuff in this is so fucking tight,
so
and it's
clean.
Good and it works and it's smart.
I agree.
Because, I mean, like, something that Disney does well, that maybe I'm just saying this because I was such a little kid when a lot of this great stuff came out. My parents wanted to go see these in theaters. Mm-hmm. They weren't just for the kids. They were for everybody. Like, everyone could sit down and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think they do really well in these movies.
It is the formula that Disney has been able to, you know, use for 100 years.
Cue the moment that I had a really fucked up idea about how tiny my waist should be.
Right.
And also, like, I always talk about that I have Disney princess syndrome. I will watch movies now at the age of 39, and I'm mad that people didn't get married in the end.
Right.
Right? Because there's this idea that they built into your
That's
psyche as a little girl, which is like, you have a story. It begins when you meet the man you're supposed to be with, uh-huh. and your story ends when you marry him. And then after that, you don't have to worry about anything ever again. You just are eternally having bliss.
You've peaked.
And that really is all your life should be for, is to live this journey.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Like, and I think that is the nature of any of those, like the fairy tale that comes from. I don't really blame the makers of the movie for that.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I agree. At the end of the Hans Christian Andersen story, she turns into sea foam. That doesn't happen.
It doesn't get anything.
Yeah, because
she's just
he
sad
doesn't
and
love her. That's he loves someone else, and she just gave up her whole life for a man
really
who didn't love her, which is very, I think it's meant to be a cautionary tale.
Yeah, for sure.
In the original story.
Most of them were.
Can we digress real quick? Just because that original story is weird.
It's all over the place.
It's an odd. It's all over the place.
Did y'all ever watch the what was it called? Storybook Theater. Is that what it was
Mm-mm.
called?
Mm-mm.
With what was her name?
Oh,
with
Shelley Duvall.
Shelley Duvall
used to host.
They did
the
a little
from
Mermaid.
The Shining.
Yeah, yeah. They
she
did a Little Mermaid.
Children's show for years.
It was amazing. It was
That's
one of
funny.
My favorite shows as a kid.
And they got the most amazing people to do it, like Mick Jagger
Robin
does
Williams
one, and Robin Williams.
It's
yeah.
incredible. But the Little Mermaid one, I can't remember who's in it. It's someone great. I remember being so sad and depressing that I like sat there in silence. I watched it alone, and I like sat there in silence when it was over, and I went downstairs and I was like, Mom, I have so many questions. Like, I was like, it was my first existential crisis. Like,
right.
So
am I going to be sea foam?
Yeah.
Am I going to be sea foam? She gave up everything for him.
We were talking a little bit about the legacy of this movie and the way that, you know, like you said, Scott, like 100 years of them making movies like this. But this movie has something very interesting, which it existed before this, but this term gets coined during the making of this film. Howard Ashman coined the term the I Want song during the making of this.
Okay.
So it's something that obviously existed before, which is something that is, it's like, it's always there. But it's like, all I want is a room somewhere. That's something I brought up earlier.
Did he coin that term?
Apparently. I mean, this is based on my research. This is just,
oh,
I found
yeah.
this.
I just didn't.
It, apparently during this, he was like, you got to have an I Want song. And they're like, what's that? And he starts listing songs and they're like, oh,
yeah.
Okay, great. And so it kind of catches on as this, you call it the I Want song. I mean, I'm sure it was called that before.
Well, I heard him refer to it in regards to Audrey, Somewhere That's Green. That
right.
He said, oh, you know, it's, every leading lady sits down on something and sings about what she wants. And in our story, it's a trash can.
Exactly.
She sings about wanting a, you know, a garbage disposal. Like,
so he's probably been using it like his whole career. And then this is when it catches on as like a industry term. All of a sudden everyone's
sure.
the I Want song, of course. And so then every movie after this that Disney makes has the I Want song. You have One Jump Ahead from Aladdin, Out There from Hunchback, which is maybe my favorite. For the First Time in Forever, Frozen, How Far I'll Go, Moana.
Mm-hmm.
A classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I love that. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and now I'm thinking of every musical that I've seen that has the I Want song in it.
It's almost every one of them.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a good device. It's a
it
great
is
device.
It is a great device.
Okay. Let's pivot a little bit away from the original film. I want to talk about the stage musical a little bit. Kate, I kind of want you to guide that because you were in it. You've engaged with it way more than we have. Have either of you seen it on stage?
No, I have not.
Hilariously enough, I was hanging out with friends of the pod, Jay and Natalie, last week, and they were showing me, I don't know what brought it up, but they ended up showing me the Under the Sea from the Broadway Little Mermaid with Titus Burgess in it, who sang his ass off the whole time.
Titus Burgess, as he does. Insane.
That is my only in with that, where they were like, yeah, they're on, what did you call them, Heelys? I called them Rollies. I just know
I think they're called Heelys.
Okay. Yeah. I just know every junior high teacher for the last 20 years has outlawed them in their classroom. But that is the only thing I've seen of it. And I was like, wow, they must have spent all of God's money to produce this musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, he was maybe one of the best. I think one of the best parts in it was Titus Burgess.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's Titus.
Norm Lewis.
Oh, it's Norm Lewis.
Sherry Renee Scott. Norm Lewis was King Triton.
Oh.
And Sherry Renee Scott was Ursula.
Oh, what a great cast.
Yeah.
It was a great cast.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, you have to get a good cast for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the movie, the original film, is really simple in its storytelling. And I think as I've gotten familiar with the stage show and then further iterations, like if you start to sort of try and expand that story and pull it apart and add to it, it starts to fall apart at the seams, I think, because it's a really simple story to begin with. And I think, there's some really fun stuff they added to the stage show. Like there's this really great number that I love in the second act where the prince, as he and Ariel are kind of starting to get to know each other without being able to speak, he sings a song, and I'm not going to remember the title of it now, but it's like, a dance is like a conversation. And so they have this really sweet sort of dance choreographic moment where you see them fall in love. And there's just lots of fun. There's a great sequence that is her rescuing Sebastian from the chef, and it's like a big comedic chaos number with all these chefs and people chasing each other around. And
is Les Poissons in the Broadway version?
Okay. So it's Les Poissons, and then it goes into this big sort of chaotic chef Sebastian running around scene.
Okay.
It's they completely take out like Ursula coming to land to like seduce Eric.
Oh.
Like they just completely avoid that whole thing. And they add this other sequence where Prince Eric like has to get married by his 18th birthday. And so they introduce him to all these princesses in the second act, and all the princesses come and sing for him. And he's like, no. And then Ariel comes and dances for him. And he's like, oh, wait, maybe you're the one I've wanted all along.
Wait, she doesn't talk.
Sidebar, because this was the big realization that I had for Kevin when I watched the animated one this time, was I think there's like this story is also sneaky about love the one you're with for Prince Eric. And there's that scene in the movie, and then this also happens in the musical, where Grimsby comes to him and is like, hey, you know, you could spend your whole life wishing for this dream girl, but, you know, I don't know if that's any better than this, you know, he says like someone kind and warm and right here in front of you.
Right.
And I never remembered that scene. And I was like, oh, that's kind of, I don't think I realized that was sort of his journey in the movie.
I've never seen the musical, but I know it's done a lot in high schools, community theaters. And so I just see a lot of pictures of people in the show in really bad costumes.
Yeah, it looks like a weird Cats a little bit.
Yes, so it's hard. So that's what I always associate it with.
There's a lot of unitards.
Yes, usually. Really poorly built bodices.
With tails sticking
and
out.
Glitter and, things like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But but I'm sure it's, you know, I know a lot of people who have been in it who really, really love it. And are like, this
it's
is
a great time.
Yeah. I'm sure
like,
it's
I don't think it's a good show, but it is so much fun to do.
Of course. Yeah.
Because it's kind of just joyful and you're reliving your childhood.
Nostalgia factor.
The songs
for sure.
are amazing. Yeah. And nothing really, like, there's all of the scary or bad villain moments are kind of played for comedy. Sure. So there's nothing really dark that you have to handle as a performer all in right. that show.
I want to make sure we talk about the movie, but I wanted to very quickly touch on something. Did anybody engage with Little Mermaid live?
I watched halfway through it today.
Okay. This is not the live action remake. This is Little Mermaid live.
Nope, the one with Queen Latifah and Shaggy. I wasn't mad at Shaggy's Under the Sea. I didn't make it to kiss the girl, but I was like, he was fine.
It was fine.
He was fine. You know what the Little Mermaid live reminded me of? It reminded me of when I went to the bowl with Leggett and saw Space Odyssey for the first time. Because anytime there was any kind of musical interaction, we were watching the movie on a big screen, but anytime there was a musical interaction, they had the LA orchestra or like the chamber choir or something doing all of the music live. So it reminded me of that a little bit, although they didn't have all the wire work that they did and silk dancing and like, God, I wonder how much money they spent on that production.
It was pretty expensive, it seems like. And it was like, they'd show the movie. You're watching the movie. Like CJ said, you're watching the movie as a audience member or at home. And then all of a sudden it'll like pull out from the screen and you'll be like, oh, and it looks kind of cool sometimes. It'll pull out from the screen and become live. And
what location was that at?
It was somewhere here, CBS or something.
Okay.
But yeah, it's Ariel is played by Auli'i Cravalho, who played
Moana.
Moana.
Yeah.
Shaggy plays Sebastian. which is amazing.
It's great.
And Amber Riley is like all of the daughters of Triton. And John Stamos.
She's the MC. Yeah. And John.
John Stamos is just the chef.
Absurd.
Absurd.
Yes.
Insane.
What a choice.
It's weird. It makes
How do you replace
sense.
Rene Auberjonois with John fucking Stamos? That
How
is
not.
I don't know. They completely
blasphemy.
Remove it in the one they made in 2023, which I want to talk about. But like, yeah, I mean, John Stamos was having the fucking time of his life in this. You can tell. But I was like, I don't know
he's
that he's good.
Fun.
I think it's more exciting that Uncle Jesse is on stage.
Yeah.
Playing this other part that we all loved when we were kids.
Queen Latifah also, who did a great job in The Wiz Live, we also decided, is good. She does a good job.
She's
to the
okay.
point where I was like, she could have done Ursula in the movie.
I have a hot take on that too.
She's great in she's in Chicago.
Yeah, of course.
She's great
Oscar.
In Chicago.
Let's pivot. CJ's got all the hot takes. So let's pivot to the new movie, the 2023 Little Mermaid Rob Marshall remake.
Mm-hmm.
Siege, go ahead.
Well, I had a weekend where I had time at home and I was high for 48 hours straight and I ended up watching four big live actions and this was the first one I turned on because it was the one that everyone was like talking about it with the casting. A lot of these, and this was one of them, the production design of it is delicious. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful film. They also like they're also trying to kind of like right wrongs from the earlier version where it's incredibly diverse, and
they change a lot of lyrics too, right? Like the "Kiss the Girl" lyrics are like, but maybe you should ask her first, cause that would be respectful.
I didn't notice,
which is great.
Yes, I didn't notice that as much as they definitely gave Ariel way more agency. Like, she's the one that kills Ursula instead of Prince Eric. And then at the end of the movie, they're not getting married. She's becoming a human part of the time so she can go adventure with him. They removed two songs from it. Was the opening sister, the Daughters of Triton song is removed.
There's not that song. It's just like a symphony playing.
Yeah. And then they took out the French Chef song Les Poissons, and I was like, "Why?" I just like I get
Scott
it that
is
it's,
offended.
I get it that it's like a silly stereotype, but I was like, "It's a white guy stereotype. Who cares? Everyone loves that fucking song." But he's not even a character in the movie. It's also an hour longer than the original. But like, out of the ones that I watched, I did Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and Lion King was terrible. It was almost my favorite out of all of them. So I think it's worth watching. If anyone
likes the
movie.
Which ones did you
movie,
watch? Which live actions?
I watched
Little Mermaid.
And then I watched Beauty and the Beast last. Aladdin. I watched Aladdin. And then I watched Lion King. And Lion King was bad.
What are y'all,
of them.
Just real quick, what are your favorites of these live action remakes? Or do you like any of them? Are there any of them that have hit for you?
I haven't seen a lot of them. I did like Beauty and the Beast.
It was up there for me, yeah.
I
might be my least.
Did I love it?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't like it at all.
Oh, okay.
But I haven't seen.
But I know
a lot
people
that
did.
Oh, I didn't. I did not care for Lion King either.
Lion King was terrible. I thought.
Yeah.
Did y'all watch that
one? I just don't
one?
Understand it because it's also animated. So I'm like sitting there like, I'd rather just watch the original.
I get weird about animating animals' mouths so they move like humans. I think it looks goofy.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially when that's the entire movie.
I think honestly, that was one of my gripes about Little Mermaid, and that was one of my biggest gripes with Beauty and the Beast, because I was so excited about the cast of Beauty and the Beast, mm-hmm. and well, I just thought they would do, if you're doing something with all the technology we have now, why not have objects that have humanoid faces like in the animated movie? So I actually get to see Ewan McGregor doing Lumiere and Emma Thompson as Mrs. Potts, not Emma Thompson voicing.
I have seen some test things that they did that are similar to that don't work.
Oh,
but
okay.
To me, I'm like, keep trying, keep doing other stuff, because what they ended up with looks like shit. But
well, it just is voiceover. It's just not. I don't know.
My favorite of the four you named. Now, I didn't finish The New Little Mermaid, so I can't really speak to it. Now, obviously, there's all the controversy about casting.
Get over it, everybody.
There's no
Get
controversy
the fuck
about
over it.
There's no controversy about casting. There are a few. There were some assholes.
There are a bunch of idiots on Twitter who are talking about it. That's what I meant.
Here's the thing. I'm like an hour and 20 minutes in. It's a very long movie, and I didn't get to finish it today, that one, but she's wonderful.
Yeah, she's lovely in it.
She's and beautiful she's voice. An Ariel. Like she suits what I want Ariel to be in every way.
For sure.
So I don't.
She's great.
That's all I have to say about that.
But I don't. You know, I can't speak to it too much. But it's not ranking high for me in those four that you named, Siege.
Oh, okay.
Out of those four, my favorite is Aladdin, because I think the second half of it is okay.
I just thought that
like
was
I think
a fucking
once Prince Ali happens, I'm like, okay, this movie's okay.
Yeah,
it makes some really weird choices.
Yeah,
but at least it's like interesting. My favorite of these live action remakes, though, was the Kenneth Branagh Cinderella with Cate Blanchett. That fucking rule.
Oh, that was great.
That one yet.
Oh yeah, that's
I never
great.
Saw it.
Oh, it's amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great. It's great because
Cate
he goes,
Blanchett
yeah,
is the
yeah.
the stepmother.
All right,
and she
I
is,
know that's perfect.
Fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Lily James and Richard Madden, right?
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Yeah, that's right.
I love that movie. I really love that movie. And I love the Cinderella story. I think Ever After is an amazing movie.
I was like 15 when that movie came out. Yeah. I love that movie.
I love that movie.
You just
movie.
Unlocked something in both CJ and I. Like, we like, oh.
It's a perfect Angelica Houston in that
She's
movie is one of my favorite.
She's crying in the rain and her Come dress on. And her wings.
Also, we're mad at you, Drew.
Fuck you, Drew Barrymore.
Okay.
God damn it. the one thing I forgot to mention, my casting hot take in the live Little Mermaid, and I know I don't actually have anything against her other than everyone loved the Bridesmaids movie, and it made me so mad I turned it off after 20 minutes. But Melissa McCarthy, who was fine as Ursula, I think it's just because I was so jazzed on finding out that Ursula was based on Divine. I was like, why wouldn't you get
some badass drag performer to play Ursula in this. But cool. I get it that, like, I don't know, it's negative connotations because it's villain. Is that something you want to put out there right now with drag performers? But I also know a drag performer could have gone up there and just fucking wrecked it the whole time.
She also really fought for it. I think it was
Lizzo tried out for it too.
Yeah, there was it was this really weird thing where I guess she, Melissa McCartney, was McCartney or Carthy?
McCarthy.
I don't know why I said McCartney. McCarthy. She,
Paul McCartney also tried out.
Ginny McCartney. I think she fought really hard for it. Like, maybe to the extent of, like, putting money behind the film.
Oh,
I could be
really,
wrong.
Really, really? I don't know for sure.
I don't know for sure. But I know she fought extraordinarily hard for this role and ended up getting it. Okay, is there anything else you guys want to say about the movie and maybe what it does to the Mankin of it all or anything like that before we get out of here? Because we've gone quite long.
It just turned me into a lifelong fan. Like, I love that shit. And didn't even, like, when I was five, I didn't know that Alan Mankin wrote it. But then I forever loved that stuff that came after it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was charmed by it. I think that they were fucking Ansel Elgort geniuses, and the whole Disney Renaissance was cool. It was cool to watch. It was cool to be there and kind of be aware of what was going on, because I'm an old man, so I remember. Yeah.
I think the thing that really stuck with me this week as I was, like, watching and researching was that I think in my mind, because Mencken's still around and has had this incredible prolific career, like, this was a Mencken movie. And then I watched that documentary about Howard Ashman and was like, oh, this was like a Howard Ashman movie that they hired Howard Ashman. And he was like, I want Alan Mencken to fly out to California and do the music with me.
Yeah.
So it was, which I don't think I really realized was, it was so much of the concepts of these songs and who these characters were and what the storytelling actually was within each individual song came from Howard Ashman. I'm gonna harp on this only for this and Beauty and the Beast, because after that, very sadly, Alan Menken had to write without Howard Ashman. But I think that was something that particularly struck me. And I think is part of, like, there's kind of a magic missing from any additional songs that have been added to Little Mermaid since then, whether it was with Glenn Slater for the Broadway show in my opinion with Lin-Manuel Miranda for the new movie. I love Lin-Manuel Miranda. I just don't think the new songs kind of have the same
I don't remember them
the original.
Since I watched it.
I agree.
Just like Mencken without Ashman, I think is like a theme that I'll probably be working through.
Absolutely.
As we do this podcast.
I agree. I think that's true. I think I will be too. And I love them as a duo. I always think of them as a duo. For when someone says Mencken, I think of Ashman. When someone says Ashman, to the point where there was a time where I got them confused always. Like, I always thought it was the opposite. I was always like, no, Ashman's the composer. And I would always get them mixed until maybe a few years ago when I was directing Little Shop and was like, I'm an idiot. Why have I thought this for so long? But yeah, I want to rewatch. I want to officially watch Howard. I think that'd be super fun. And we have so much more to talk about Mencken. We have so many more things to get to.
Oh, yeah.
Next time we'll be doing Newsies. That's the next one. But we got Beauty and the Beast. We got Hunchback, which is maybe one of my favorite Disney animated films.
It's so fucking good.
Oh, I love it so much.
It's not correct with the real story at all. But
no, none of them are. And that's okay.
And that is a unique pairing of Mencken and Schwartz.
Ooh, that's right. Stevie Schwartz.
An excellent pairing.
It is an excellent pairing. Stevie Schwartz.
Little Stevie Schwartz.
Little Stevie Schwartz. I've told this story on the pod, but I'm going to tell it so quickly. No, I'll save it for that episode. I'll save it because I'll think of it. But he did a show at Music. He did the Geppetto movie at Music Theater Wichita as a musical. Stephen Schwartz did, and I have stories. We'll get there.
Okay.
It was really bad. Is that it? Is that all we do? Is there something we need to do?
Anyone have a spotlight? I don't this week, but
LA spotlights. We should do that.
Yes.
LA spotlight.
Well, yeah, we should hype. this little show that we're doing.
What's it called?
Mothers of God.
That one.
Yeah. That we're all doing. It's really exciting that we're all doing a show together.
Stoked.
But it's Pay What You Can, October 7th at 8 p.m.
Next weekend.
Yes. October.
From when this comes out.
Yes. And then October 8th at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. You can check out sacredfools.org. Tickets are Pay What You Can. Donate what you can. And it's a really cool cast, and I'm very excited to hear it and be a part of it.
Yeah, Kate's directing. Mm-hmm. CJ is playing a sex worker.
Mm-hmm. Chain smoking
mm-hmm. sex worker,
aka what I was born to play,
what she was born to do, and what she has been known as on this podcast since day one. That's actually true. That was an old bit.
Yes.
And then Scott is playing a deacon.
A real
of a church,
piece of shit.
And he's a piece of shit.
Hey, wow. Don't judge my character, thank you.
Yeah. That's the only direction I'm going to give you, Scott.
You're a piece of shit.
You play more as a piece of shit.
Yeah.
No. That's it. I'm going to find the love in Judah.
DJ. Yeah. Yeah. Kate, do you have anything else to plug?
No, I'm all in Mothers of God world right
Good.
Now.
Cool. Well, we'll come back. You'll be with us next time for the next Mankin series. That might be in a few
Yay!
Weeks, but that's all right.
Lovely to have you here.
Yes. Thank you,
for
Kate, for joining
me,
us.
Everyone.
We appreciate you. And thank you, listeners, for joining us for part one of a six-part
50 million
seven-part yeah.
Yeah,
at least we're not doing all of the nonsense.
No spin-offs. listen if we make it to season six
we do nonsense. And all Meshuggah nuns,
can't wait.
We all have all a veto them. And I'm gonna throw my veto out.
You already used your veto on Annie Live, so you don't have any more.
If we had a veto, I would have vetoed Jodorowsky years ago.
Yeah, you should have. You should have.
Well,
it's fine.
Now I'm going to seek revenge.
That's right. Join us next time for Scott's pick. What is it, Scott?
It's going to be a David Lynch movie. I haven't decided yet, but it's going to be a David Lynch movie.
All right.
Okay. We're going to get into David Lynch. I think Blue Velvet, but maybe we'll start with Elephant Man.
If you're going to go theater... Can I give you two recommendations?
Uh-huh.
Either Elephant Man, because it's also a play.
Yes.
That he made into a movie. Or Inland Empire, because that is the most, like, meta-theatrical.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, that one's crazy.
I think we'll
do Elephant Man.
Let's do Elephant Man. That's a great call.
It's
John Hurt. There's so much
Anthony
to talk
Hopkins.
About.
Anthony Hopkins.
Great. Yeah. So we'll see you next week for Elephant Man, David Lynch's Elephant Man, and we'll talk about the play a little bit. CJ, what are you going to choose? What's after that? Do you know?
Next is season 2, episode 6 and 7 of Pen 15, where
nice.
They have a short storyline about doing junior high theater.
I can't wait.
It's pretty great.
That'll be super fun. Okay, well, good. CJ?
You all have questions or comments, please reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott.
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your fucking theme song.
Bitch.
Whoa.
Boom. He also writes all of our stingers, and he's an amazing human being. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright, Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
Yeah.
It's true. A sour. Mm-hmm. Or a Hefeweizen.
Or whatever she likes.
Whatever you want.
She can have a cider.
Kate, do you have 16 bars of a song you'd like to sing, or would you like to save it for next time? It's up to you.
Come on.
No, you sing, please.
All I want is a room somewhere far away from the cold night air. With one enormous chair. Oh, whoa. Didn't it be lovely?
That's Carol Churchill singing.
Later, everybody.
The theater. The theater. Sing it, Louise!
Theater. Theater.
To me.